Hello, this is Sean, and welcome to Fuck Your Opinion, a movie review podcast. Before we get started, please make sure to like, follow, subscribe, write a review of this podcast wherever you are listening right now. And please be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. All those are linked in the description. Enjoy the episode.
All right.
Take we are recording.
Get a little tipsy here. Mm-hmm. Yep, there we go. Okay.
Getting Let's tipsy. Do this. I'm getting wasted like Freddy.
Let's do this. Let's do this.
Tango and Cash.
Cash and Let's
Tango and Cash.
Let's do this. Ha
ha. Oh. No, absolutely not.
I'm Jack Palance.
That's not how Jack Palance did it.
I had my testicles removed at the age of 14. I'm overcompensating.
What is that a reference to?
Nothing.
Are you just doing that?
Absolutely nothing. That was all extemporaneous.
Like, are you trying to imply Jack Palance had his...
Yes. Why do you think he did all those push-ups at the Academy Awards? Overcompensation.
Yeah, I'm sure that was it.
You know, I started this glass started out as a triple and I'm down to a single, and I poured it less than 20 minutes ago.
Oh man, oh man. Well, Yanni is drinking his scotch, right? You said scotch
Talisker.
Yeah, I am drinking Mike's Hard lemonade, but specifically black cherry, and specifically in a can, not a bottle. It's really sad. It's pretty pathetic if you ask me.
Hey, Sean, do you have any Airheads? Maybe some Jolly Ranchers? Some Smarties?
All right,
I'm insinuating that you're a high school student because you're drinking Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Here's the thing, folks. I recently moved, and, you know, it's been a whole thing. But, okay, granted, I've been in my place for like a month, so I've definitely had time to get liquor. But I've been waiting on my new credit card before I made any big purchases. So I want to get like a cash back. So I got to spend money on that card. So I've been waiting to spend the significant money on, you know, that card. And I just got that card. By the way, Yanni, I'll have you know, because I'm getting a new phone. Yanni's like, use back market. I'll have you know, I got a phone on back market.
Hey,
I also
now,
bought an iPhone 12 mini.
That it wasn't
and I'm debating
an iPhone.
Which one
oh
to go
God.
With.
You know, just when you almost had me condoning your decision, you went and you mentioned that you got an iPhone. And
well, you see, here's the thing. I got the iPhone and then the bill was $750 and I went, oh, fuck me. So I'm still holding on the iPhone, haven't opened it yet. I'm like, let me go on back market. And I just bought a phone for $100.
Yeah, I told you it's refurbished. There will be some slight cosmetic issues, but other than that, it'll run fine.
Here's how I'm looking at it, right?
14 Chinese children won't roll over in their graves.
If this is a mistake and it sucks, you know what? I'm only out $100 and I can get that iPhone later. It's not going to change in price, right?
And it only takes 4 hours of your life to earn back that $100. So
don't put it like that.
Oh, I love putting it like that. I love that so much. You're trading your own life to be able to survive.
Yeah, that's literally what I'm doing.
To enable your survival. But that's what everyone does. That's what everyone does. We
I
are
know,
all, Sean,
I know.
Sean, we are all prostitutes.
Yeah.
Never forget
I know.
It.
I know. So yes, hello and welcome to Fuck Your Opinion. This is a movie review podcast. With yours truly, Sean, and
Yanni
my co-host, Yanni
Pontescoto, and my co-host, Sean Corbin.
What we do with this movie review podcast, there's a unique spin to it, a unique twist.
What's that twist, Sean?
The twist is that instead of just watching movies we love,
ooh, yeah,
we watch a movie that only one of us loves,
twist
and the
me
other
up real
one
good.
Is pretty sure the other one's going to hate. So just
sometimes.
You know, stick it to the other person to really annoy them.
Some of us are bad at making guesses.
Yanni, what movie did you pick for us this week?
Well, to follow up Sean's choice last week of the 1990 film, sorry, movie, 1990 movie Ghost, I decided
I
would provide Sean with an option. He could either choose a film about a guy who's been dead for a long time or a film about a guy who just died. Sean,
I mean, guy, there's
the
multiple
former.
Guys. There's multiple people have been dead a long time in this movie, but whatever.
Well, either way, it applies to all of them then. It applies to all of them. You're just
whatever.
You're just confirming Anyways, The Dead. It was John Huston's 1987 film, The Dead, based, which was an adaptation of a James Joyce short story from the short story collection Dubliners, I believe, that came out in like 1914 or something like that. It was in the teens. So I chose it because this is the podcast where we make the person that we think will hate to watch the film. So I thought Sean would be bored out of his mind watching it. That's why I picked it. Aside from that, it's why I actually love this film. I'm a huge James Joyce fan. I have been since I was a teenager. He's a spectacular writer. Anybody who hasn't picked up a copy of Dubliners, go out and do it right now. I don't care if the bookstores are closed. I don't care if you're in the middle of Yemen. Go and do it.
I have a bookstore down the street. No thanks.
Then go do it. It's only 7:23. There's a good chance that they're still open, Sean. Go right in the middle of this podcast and obtain a copy of Dubliners. Then bring it back to your house. Wait, do you have a car? No, you don't have a car. No, so you'd have to hook your whole way there. That doesn't work.
Here's the thing. Amazon? I'll have to take the metro, and I think if someone sees me holding a copy of Dubliners, it's such a valuable commodity, and I'm probably going to get mugged and stabbed. Unlike an iPhone. Like, if I have my iPhone out...
Everyone's got one of those.
I have a copy of Dubliners out. Yeah, they're going to be like, iPhone.
Everyone's got one. Not everybody has a copy of Dubliners.
But Dubliners.
Dubliners. Yeah.
Gonna get robbed for it.
It's a spectacular collection of short stories, the best of which is Save for Last. It's The Dead. Really great adaptation. Honestly, one of the most faithful adaptations I've seen. There are like little tweaks here and there, but ultimately, beginning, middle, and end, pretty much the same. They don't try to amp up any conflict. They don't try to make things any bigger than they are. It's a very subdued, very musical, very sweet, and very touching film that will tug on multiple different emotions throughout its very short runtime. It's also only like an hour and 26, I think. Hour 26, maybe. It's
Why
less
do you
than
say
one.
These things like they're questions? You know the answer. And you act like it's you're so smart for figuring it out on the spot. You definitely looked it up ahead of time.
No,
you
I don't.
Always do this.
I don't remember what it is. I really don't. But I know it's less than 120 without credits. And honestly, just for the scene, the Lass of Aughrim scene, which we'll talk about later, because it's honestly one of my favorite scenes in cinema. For that scene alone, I'm going to give this one an 8.6.
Oh, geez. You know, I want to say, Yanni, just right off the bat, there are many reasons why I'm annoyed you picked this movie, but I think chief among them is you know the naming convention of this podcast.
What
you
is
know
it?
That it's fuck and then the title of the movie. So, for example, last time, fuck Ghost. Right?
So, Sean, what would the title of this episode be?
The title of this episode is going to be Fuck what? The Dead. What is wrong with you? Everyone's going to come here expecting necrophilia, and they're going to get a stupid James Joyce movie review.
Well, if you put the year in parentheses, people are less likely.
If you came here for the necrophilia, I'm sorry, but we
You're
don't
sorely
have
mistaken.
That. I mean, Yanni might get into that a little later. I don't know. He has some odd tastes. But
I do.
It's not.
I really
it's not
do.
The aim of this episode.
No, it's not. It's the profundity of music, how it grasps and tears at our souls, and how it affects us each in individual, unique ways. It's also about Ireland and free in Ireland. Let's get Ireland out from under the claws of those Brits.
That just The other thing I want to say is one of my coworkers listened to the National Treasure episode.
Oh, yay.
And she couldn't believe we were friends. I had to convince her.
No, we like each other. We really do.
And here's the thing. We agree on the National Treasure episode. We just mock
it. Oh, no. Is our chemistry that bad?
I'm just like, man, if you got to one of the ones we were really going at each other, man, I can't even imagine what you think.
you should really recommend she listen to Ocean's 12.
That's what I recommended.
Or the Ghost episode, if she likes Ghost, because...
Ghost is not out yet. Yeah.
No, but when it is, I'm saying when it is, recommend it.
Yeah. No, I will. It's funny, though. But anyways, next part of this podcast is... The person who did not choose the film, I'm sorry, movie. Person who chose the, did not choose the movie. Film.
The does, disaffected, disinterested, or dispassionate party.
Does a plot summary for the movie. So that would be me to do doing a plot summary.
Plot summary of this film.
There is a dinner. Can I go now?
Yes.
There is a dinner. A group of folks gather around to eat dinner. They eat and talk about things. And then they all go home and think about how shitty their lives are.
You almost had summary. Me. You almost had me. Now, if you had said they all think about the young boy who was in love with them when they were 17, who killed himself rather than lose.
Yeah, but Freddie ain't thinking about that.
Hey, Freddie could be. You don't know. Maybe that's why he drinks. He's suppressing those homosexual urges. It's 1904, Sean. Come on. Ireland. Ireland
there
in
is
1904.
Nothing to support that.
Have you seen his hair? His hair is very fancy.
Oh my God. You know, I was going to say this later, but like in another world, Freddie would be my grandfather or my great, great grandfather, you know?
No. How so? Explain that.
Just, I thought you would make this joke towards me. I thought you'd be like, he's such a loser like you, Sean, but I guess you're not making it.
I don't consider you a loser. I consider you a friend.
Oh, okay. Thank you, friend.
Who is not very accomplished.
Okay. Also, not necessarily grandfathery, but at least something I can relate to. When the mother is like, I don't think he's going to ever marry at this point. I go, aw, me too.
Okay. But in all honesty, Freddie's probably in his like 40s. All right. You still got 10 years.
Oh, yeah. No, I still got some time.
10 hey, years to not no, get married.
I'm in Los Angeles. If I keep myself fit enough, I got 20.
Hey, yeah. Prostitutes. Aging prostitutes. There you go.
What do you mean aging? I'm saying marry. You don't marry an aging prostitute.
No, I'm saying that's all that's out there for you.
No, but I'm saying if I get some money and I get successful, I can be in my 50s.
Again, I'm not revising my statement.
Oh, fuck you. What's your plot summary?
All right. The date is January 6th, 1904 in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh my God.
A group of people convene to celebrate it's not the Ascension. I don't remember exactly what religious holiday it is, but they get together to have a feast, celebrate the lives of the elders and the music teacher, this one family, Julia. I don't remember the other two names. But while they're there, the film explores the different ways that music impacts their lives, how they celebrate music, how they relate to music, how music resonates with them. And slowly over the course of the film, you see the camera spend more and more time focusing on the protagonist's wife, Greta. The protagonist's name is Gabriel. Wife is Greta. Eventually, the dinner ends and they all leave.
Quote unquote protagonist. Very loose.
Kind of. He very loose. It is very loose. He's the protagonist definitely in the short story, but even then, the short story is about a lot of stuff too. Everyone leaves, and when they leave, Gabriel, the protagonist, he's feeling a little romantic towards his wife while she's totally kind of dismissive. When they get back to their hotel, she reveals that she's been kind of distant this whole night because the music and all of the time together with all of these other people, all these family members and friends, has reminded her of this one time when a boy that she was in love with sang her a song and as a consequence of it died. And it gets really depressing in the last 5 minutes. It's about end of the day. It's about kind of draws this comparison between music and death and how profoundly those two sort of inevitabilities in life just reach in and twist us all up like a big old bundle of barbed wire.
I will say to that point, though, while death is inevitable, music is not, because if you are deaf, you cannot hear music.
Hey, you know who composed when he was deaf?
Just because you cite Beethoven. The exception. The exception is not the rule.
Oh, okay. So because you're blind, you also can't play instruments because you can't see the instrument. That's right.
I'm not saying you can't.
That's
right.
You can't
hear the instruments. You can't hear it if you're deaf.
That doesn't mean anything.
Music is an auditory form. What do you mean it doesn't mean anything?
Go. I guarantee you. Go on the internet. Look up deaf musical artists. You'll find dozens. At the very least, dozens.
Oh, my God. I was just trying to make a joke, a clever pun. On words.
Well, you just made yourself Look, you made yourself look like a total Freddy. That's what you did.
Oh, come on. You look
like a slobbering, lisping drunk.
Listen, which is what you're the you one are. Who's drunker right now, okay?
No, I am not. One. No, I am you, not. Not yet. Like, Hold on. Okay, I am now.
Okay, you had now three, I'm the drunker. Basically three shots of straight liquor.
Yes.
My thing is weak as shit comparison.
It's 5%.
Mine's
I'm drinking 8%. 46.
Mine's 8%. Dumbass.
Whatever. I don't remember what we're doing.
We're doing a podcast.
Hi. The name's Yanni.
Oh, my God.
Yanni Apostolos Pontiscoto.
Yanni said, you know what? This movie's about drinking and people getting drunk. So that's what I'm going to do. Now, folks, normally what
it's about two characters getting drunk.
Okay.
Whatever. Normally.
Now, folks, what we normally do is go into a Yogi green tea quote of the day. Now,
but Sean gave that up because he's
I gave
too
that up.
Lazy.
Like Yanni gave up decimal points.
Yep.
Even though he used a decimal point for this review. So did he really give it up? I don't think so.
I gave up the joke is what I gave up. I didn't give up decimal points.
I wish I could give up you, but
why
here
can't
we are.
I quit you?
Anyways, so moving on, next what we do is we do our three favorite aspects of the film, movie, and then we do our three least favorite aspects of the movie. I'll start us off because this is kind of what we're talking about already. The drunk acting. I thought the drunk acting in this movie was great. And this sounds like such a slight and such a petty kind of thing.
It's such a weird life.
Okay. Number one, there's not like the things to talk about in this movie are really existential. It's hard to really get into like, oh, the cinematography or this or that. There's not a whole lot fucking going on.
There is to get into with the cinematography and the editing, but we'll
there
I'll
is
get to
get
that
into that. But I would just say in general, there's a lot of things that are, it's not as easy to grasp onto in as opposed to other films. But I think one of the things is there are two actors, the guy who plays Freddy and then another old guy who get just shit faced throughout the whole movie. And they played very, very, very convincing drunks. Again, it sounds like, well, how hard is that? Folks, I mean, we've all seen it before. It's pretty hard to be that convincing and to do a good job and to, you know, just really sell it. And I thought both of these actors not only nailed it, but also did a great job at growing their drunkenness, you know, like just starting from like, kind of tipsy to like just straight up shit-faced. It was a great arc, I guess, if you will, and
well, the
growth
older gentleman.
In that.
Gets a, he's the one who gets completely, totally inebriated. Freddy, I think, actually technically sobers
sloshed.
Up. No, I think Freddy kind of sobers up by the end.
Yeah, he sobers
in
up
comparison
after well,
to how
he
arrives.
Well, because he gets super shit-faced and his mom tells him, like, basically stops him from drinking. So then he sobers up a little bit. So it makes sense.
But it does, I guess.
I know.
I'm not. I don't disagree with you. It's a small thing, but also
it's a small thing. It's a small thing. It just stood out to me and impressed me. You know,
I've seen plenty of drunk performances that I did not believe for a second.
Yeah.
Then again, I'm a sad drunk. I'm a sad drunk. Sad, angry drunk. So,
and that's why
when I see people very lighthearted, I'm like, what? This doesn't make any sense. Why aren't you talking about that one time? That your uncle and I'm done. I'm not taking that joke any further. I'm sorry, folks. You're gonna have to go to FYO After Dark if you want to hear that
joke.
I'm
so confused. What was the joke?
I was probably gonna do like an uncle molestation joke, but it's you know
why
why
did
would
you need
a
to
man
go there?
Drink as much as I do? Why would he need to, Sean? Demons.
There are other demons you have. You don't need
demons.
You don't need to allude to a fake demon. That's a little offensive. That is not a little. That is offensive. Like, what's wrong with you?
In khaki shorts, demons in khaki shorts, slides, and polo t-shirts.
Oh,
anyways,
what's
you're probably
your
wondering
like?
What my first like is.
We're not wondering, but just tell us.
So I would have to say that my first like, and it's why I like the short story so much, and it is these very subtle thematic and visual allusions to the ending reveal. Like I said, as we learn at the very end, Gabriel's wife, Greta, was once in a romance with this 17-year-old boy when she lived in Galway. She was going off to a convent. and she wasn't going to see him anymore. He was also kind of ill, so a little frail, a little sick. On the night that she was, on the night before she was supposed to leave, he comes and visits her in the middle of the rain to see her one last time, and this is ultimately an event that winds up killing him. But their relationship was one that was full of joy. Before that, they would walk, they would go on long walks together. He would sing her this one specific song, The Lass of Aughrim, that would become very instrumental in the plot. But throughout the entirety of the actual film, Houston, both the Houstons, Tony and John, because, by the way, we didn't talk about this. This is a Houston family effort. Greta is played by Angelica Houston. It's directed by John Houston. Son Tony Houston wrote the screenplay. But from the very get-go, you just have them alluding to this sort of romantic strife and the outcomes that arise from that. Whether it's the servant girl who's clearly going through some sort of romantic upset, the fact that Greta dances with other men for like half an hour before she ever dances with Gabriel. The recitation of the poem, where there's this great line. I think it's an 8th century Irish poem, actually. And it wasn't in the book. That's the other thing. This is the one of the few parts of the film that was actually added, but it was also a translation by a famous Irish poet that Tony Houston didn't actually have to write, so I'll allow it. But there's a great line that goes, shutting the door after the house has been robbed. But the whole time you have this absence of this traditionally like romantic sentiment between Gabriel and his wife, and then other allusions like the death of a young opera singer and monks, for instance, sleeping in their coffins to remind them of mortality. But it all culminates in this one spectacular scene that I alluded to at the very beginning. I said it's probably one of my favorite scenes in all of cinema, and it's taken, adapted so perfectly from the short story. Basically, setup is... everyone is out of the house or leaving the house. Gabriel's at the very bottom of the stairs because all of the festivities take place on the second floor, putting on his galoshes, and then he hears music coming from the upstairs hall. It's a tenor who was in attendance singing The Lass of Aughrim, and as that tenor starts singing, Angelica Houston, Greta, starts walking down the stairs, and the camera barely cuts away from her. I think it cuts away from her like two or three times. So the entirety of the scene is just her listening to a song and maybe cutting back to Gabriel. And it's one of the most powerful things. I really can't even describe it. I can't do it justice. It's one of the most powerful performances I've seen. And it's kind of like heartbreaking that she didn't at least get a nomination. But that's that right there is the straw that breaks the camel's back before we get to that conclusion. So I can tell Sean's pretty bored. He's already picked up his phone. He's looking at it.
I'm not bored.
I'm bored him entirely.
Letting you go because you just like to go sometimes.
I'm glomming. I'm just glomming on it. I've got a big old pile of the dead in front of me and I'm digging in. I'm shoveling it into my mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm not even chewing. I'm surprised I'm not choking to death on the dead right now, Sean.
Yeah, you're choking as you know, doing your necrophilia business.
Sean, you're the one who realized what I was doing, okay? Not me.
It's pretty obvious. Speaking of the Oscars, I didn't look up what won this year for the Oscars, but for my picks, I am doing, and I want to respond to what Yoni was saying in a second, but my picks are going to be the top movies of each year. Yoni, do you know what was the highest grossing movie of this year?
It was probably some superhero movie.
In the 80s?
Oh, in 87 you meant.
Yes.
I thought you meant, okay.
No, the year this movie came out.
It wasn't Highlander, because Highlander was like 84, 85.
Highlander was never the number one.
I know, but it should have been.
guess.
I have, let's see, what came out in 87? I don't know. The 80s are a bad decade for me. I don't watch a lot of films from the 80s.
This is going to break your heart. Three Men and a Baby.
What?
Number one, baby.
How much did it make? $800 million.
It didn't make, did it? I don't think it did.
No, that's...
I'm like, that's not possible back then.
$800 million before inflation.
There's no way that's possible. That's not it.
Three Men and a Baby. Okay, how much did it make? Or are you not going to tell me?
Oh, I don't have it pulled up. I just know it was number one.
Okay, we'll just get to your second point already then.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to respond to what you were talking about because my next point is more or less what you were talking about. And I just want to say real quick, I told Yanni this before on the podcast, and I'll tell him again because it's really freaking annoying. Because even though sometimes we can have our fights, one thing that kind of sometimes really annoys me is when he just keeps picking movies that I'm like, fine with, that I actually kind of like. Do Aww. It again and again. I like this
you
movie.
You liked it.
I liked Aww. It. I liked it. Aww. What can I say? So the thing is, and this will be a dislike, but there's not a whole lot to talk about with this movie. But there's also a lot to talk about this movie. And with the lot to talk about this movie is the themes that Yanni was alluding to or talking about. It obviously culminates in the ending that he was talking about. And the ending is beautiful. I won't really get into that right now. But what I thought was just so poignant throughout the movie, because they do this several times in various different ways, is essentially how characters reflect on people who have since passed. I mean, that is why it's called The Dead. They're constantly talking about, you know, this singer that they once knew that died, or this person that they once knew that died. And they talk about them through various stories. But it is just so interesting to see how things contrast between everything. And it really stood out to me. There was just one scene. Again, they're all gathered around to have dinner. There's three main women who are hosting it. Two are older and one is younger. And everyone else kind of stands up and applauds them. And earlier, those three women, at least two of them, had sung songs. And it was pretty beautiful. But they were all the crowd gathered and applauded them and really just made them feel special in that moment. They made them feel seen, you know? And I thought it was really something to have essentially the close-up, or not close-up, but like a medium just focus on them, and then a reverse of the essentially the crowd of everybody. Because essentially that's saying, these are the people that are going to remember you. These are the only people that are going to remember essentially this moment that you perform this song in your life, you know? There's one old lady who they allude to, she's been not the greatest singer throughout her whole life. And then she finally gave this one great performance, you know? It's just like, you know, whether that's accurate or not, it's interesting to think, like, in a sense, this could be like the quote unquote performance of her life. Not that it is, but think about it like that way. And then how it's only been heard by a select few people, right? And how these people are, you know, clapping her, cheering her on. And yet, you know, as it alludes to at the end of the film, granted, I was thinking about this as it was happening, not at the end, but how she's going to pass away soon. And how she's going to essentially turn into a memory like the other people that they're talking about. And mm-hmm. with the people that they're talking about, you know, like various other singers, it's just interesting. And again, going with the contrast and everything, is how there's one singer in particular that I think it was that old lady, but it might have been another one.
Parkinson?
Who was talking about? Was talking about this performer, the singer,
that she saw that not a lot of other people saw?
The one that had the beautiful voice that...
Parkinson.
Maybe, yeah. That essentially she was remembering the voice fondly and like, oh, he was such a beautiful singer.
And that really gradual zoom in on her.
Yeah, and like you could tell it really meant something to her. But then a younger guy down on the other end of the table is like, never heard of him, have no idea who he is. But then we go back to an older guy who, and I apologize, I just don't remember anyone's name, but then he says, oh, you know, I do remember him. He had a great voice. And it's just interesting how like that back and forth on how, again, how people are remembered, how people are talked about, and, you know, what their lives kind of meant to others. Because, and I apologize for harping on, like I just criticized Yanni for harping on, because, you know, but this film is an interesting one to talk about thematically, because there's a lot going on.
Well, it's all
a lot
theme.
That reinforce. Yeah, exactly. It's all theme. It all reinforces its theme, right? Because again, going off of everything I was just saying, right? There's a scene when they leave the party when, what's the husband's name?
Gabriel.
When Gabriel and Angelica Houston are leaving the party, and like Yanni said, Angelica Houston is so transfixed by something else at the moment. We don't know what it is, but she's just not paying attention. And Gabriel tells this story, like this goofy kind of story about his grandfather. And he's clearly just trying to cheer her up and, you know, just have a laugh. But, you know, it's a pretty nostalgic and sentimental story that clearly means something to him. And she doesn't give a fuck. Now, at the
it's
moment,
not that she doesn't give a fuck. It's she's kind of distracted. She's obviously she's distracted. She's clearly thinking about something else.
Listen, I had this thought before I had gotten to the ending. So you obviously had the benefit of the ending and what was going on, but I didn't. And I'm like, it's just interesting how, again, going along with how someone is remembered, how that guy's memory is essentially just fading away. And like, that might be the last time everyone ever talks about him. And it was his grandson trying to tell a story and it didn't even resonate with his wife. And then that's it. And you're gone.
But then the story she tells just shakes him to his core. He realizes in his voiceover, in his monologue at the very end, like he realizes he's never loved anyone as much as she loves. He's never loved a woman as much as she loved that boy, Michael
Fury. I thought it was
the
reverse. I thought it was he never loved anyone as much as he loved her, as Michael Fury loved her.
Yeah. Sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
Michael Fury loved her. He never loved a woman enough to die for her. That's right. But yeah, there was just something I forgot to point out. Two things. So you were talking about Parkinson, the woman who was talking about the tenor Parkinson, how no one else had really heard about him, but she had. He meant something very profound to her. As she ends that monologue, you know what they do? You know what the editor cuts to?
What?
Greta, the first thing it cut, and I didn't remember exactly this time around. I've only seen this film one time before today. But this time around, I was starting to notice the patterns throughout, you know, the little allusions here and there. And I thought to myself, okay, at the end of this, they're going to cut back to Greta. That would be the absolute smartest move. And they do for like 2 or 3 seconds. She's just kind of lost in thought. And then they cut away from her. Same thing. Just like another really small thing. When she's on the stairwell, her eye line is looking down. It's facing down. She's declined her head like she's looking down to someone. And I think that is just like, that is such a small but brilliant decision by both the Houstons. It makes me sad, but also happy at the same time, simultaneously, somehow, that this was John Huston's last film. Because it's, I mean, I really like The Man Who Would Be King, but I'd honestly put this above it for how.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
How much it does with how little. But yeah, okay. So now we're onto my second point.
I just want to say real quick, going off of what you're saying, and I think you're going to get to this in a bit, but just how what essentially everything I was saying. Essentially is a reflection of John Huston reflecting on, you know, his death that was coming soon because he was dying as he was doing this, as well as reflecting on legacy, which basically are the themes of this movie. It's fascinating in a way.
Don't forget, I don't know if you looked this up, he died before it premiered.
Yeah, I saw.
He died before the theatrical premiere, which is kind of heartbreaking.
Well, at least they didn't see that he got beat up by 3 men and a baby.
Yeah, that would have killed him. So my second thing, my second and honestly, it's like it kind of all has to do with the same thing. Poignancy and execution of theme. The central theme of The Dead, James Joyce's short story, is essentially just the multiplicity of ways that we are affected by the arts, and in particular music, because it is this thing that doesn't actually physically exist. It's created from the vibrations of strings and like air traveling through different channels in different ways, and people hitting on like animal skins. But it creates these sounds, these things that don't necessarily physically exist. They're vibrations in the air. But each one of them carries this very distinct emotion with it. Like, we hear a song and we more or less, I mean, we don't all react to it to the same way, but we hear a song and we can tell if it's sad. We can tell if it's supposed to be happy. We can tell all of these things from this thing that's not even technically real. It's this form of medium that kind of transcends, this form of media that transcends every other one. And in that way, it's really the only sort of theme that could rival the theme of death and the theme of legacy in this film. And it's so well executed, like I said. And probably the best way to see it at work is not necessarily how it interacts with all of the events of the main narrative, right? Everything that pertains to Greta and Gabriel. But honestly, to see the way it interacts with those scenes, like you were talking about with, I think it was Julia talking about Parkinson. There's this great little scene between the tenor and another young woman breaking a wishbone. And then later, after everyone's filing out, they talk together just for a short moment about music. Just all of these very small, minute things. Well, he totally disappoints her, but whatever. It's all these tiny, minute things that suffuse the film. You know, it fills in every single crack. I mean, it even goes so far as the set decoration, right? At one point during a song, I think it's while the elder sister is singing, you remember this? The camera cuts away from the performance and it goes into the bedrooms. And you start seeing Houston start showing us framed black and white photographs. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Of presumably people's, like, one of the sisters' husbands or both the sisters' husbands, people that are no longer around. And to juxtapose that to the music, to the events in the opposite room, it is such a brilliant, almost subliminal move. And it acts on you without you even acknowledging it. Like, it was able to elicit all of these emotions in me the first time that I watched it without even going back and analyzing it and looking at it the way I did this time around. And it's just, in its simplicity, so brilliant.
Yeah.
Just digging my spoon into that pile of the dead and ramming it down my throat, saying, give me more dead.
Wait, so more of the dead. Let me clarify. Is this before, during, or after you fucked the corpse?
I'm not entertaining this joke. I'm just going to ignore you, sir.
You served it on a silver platter to me.
I served the dead on a silver platter.
You said you were just going to eat it up. A spoonful of it. I mean, like, why even? You set it up.
Like a ladle. I'm just plunging my ladle into that pile, to that soft decomposing pile of the dead. And I'm putting the whole thing in my mouth.
Here's the thing. This joke, it's not only a callback, but it makes sense within the reference of everything we're talking about. Where the other one you made that was, you know, you obviously cut yourself off, but couldn't help yourself to say what it was going to be.
Which one? The molestation joke?
Yes. That didn't need to be there. Oh my God.
Anyways, what's your third like, Sean?
My third like is, and this is kind of, because this film is very simple and it's very thematic focused, and what it's about, it ends up being, there's this interesting meta element to it. As we were talking about, it's there's the meta element of it being John Huston's last film and him reflecting on things, as I was just talking about earlier. But it's also interesting how everyone's talking about remembering people that have died. But this is a film, well, obviously the story was written in 1914. This is a film that was shot and premiered in 1987, when presumably all these characters, if they were real, would be dead. So it's interesting to have this voyeuristic aspect of essentially telling a story of these characters who are dead, talking about people who have affected them, who have passed away. It's an interesting thought experiment and just reflecting back on itself. And I thought there is an interesting poignancy and beauty to that. And obviously there will be an added layer when the actors pass away, you know, and however long that is. I mean, some have obviously since passed on, but
yeah,
plenty are actors still with us. So it's just, it's an interesting element to it. Where when I first saw that the movie was called The Dead, I was expecting different things. I had no idea what this is going
to
be.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. I want to know at some point what you expected this to be before you watched it. Finish your point, but also I want to know that.
Well,
that
what I was going to say was a lot like a lot of Yanni's other picks, in which we have big families gathering around dinner tables and having festivities, like the leopard, like Fanny and Alexander, more so the leopard. I expected something dramatic to happen at some point. And then you get to a certain point where you realize, oh, something dramatic is not going to happen. I thought, oh, this is just the first act. And then someone, one of these key characters is going to die. And then we're going to cut to later on and have them reflect on it. Never happened. And that usually is when you're significantly into it and you realize, oh, okay. So that was really just
underestimation of Joyce. Wow. Gross.
Okay. Well, artist as a young man, how about you, you know,
a portrait of an artist as a young man.
Well, I can't call you a portrait. Are you a portrait or are you a young man?
I'm handsome like one.
You're handsome like a portrait?
Yes. And I'm also handsome like a young man.
You're like a Picasso, but one of the weird ones.
If I'm a Picasso, you're a Kandinsky. Look it up.
He knows I won't know what that is. Jerk. You're a Pollock. Anyways, yeah, like I said, I think that meta element to it is just a fascinating subtext to it. I think it's intentional. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it is. But yeah.
How can it not be? I mean, it is. That's the reality of art. You know, you're going to create things. You'd like to, in some cases, remove the artist, remove all of the conditions of the creation of the piece apart, away from the piece, and just appreciate it for what it is. But you can't. It's inextricable. Yeah, inextricable. Like, inextricable?
In a way, this podcast is an art, you know, and you can't separate.
No. This is entirely improvised on the spot. Improvisation is not an art. Tell Martin Scorsese that. Nothing he makes is art anymore because he improvises. Tell Leo, improvisation is not an art.
Him I'm confused. What are you trying to say?
So my third favorite like,
oh my God,
actually pertains to Sean's. And it's honestly just part of it is the fact that this is one of the most authentic, accurate adaptations of a piece of literature that I've ever seen.
That's not what I said, by the way.
But the other part of that is the fact that this was just a huge Houston family production. Like I've mentioned,
what I said.
Let me finish. I said it pertains. It's pertinent. It's a big Houston family production.
I feel like Tony wasn't pulling his weight.
Tony wrote the screenplay by himself. Maybe Tony hasn't pulled his weight since, but he did then. He got did it well enough to get nominated.
Some, like B movies.
But then again, he also, you know, kind of just copied and pasted some of James Joyce's dialogue in there, and it was more like James Joyce kind of won half the odds. If Joyce were alive at the time, he should have been at the awards and also accepted the Academy Award if he had won. But he also didn't win either, so neither here nor there. But just the fact that this was a family effort, you know, it's a really simple thing.
You think we should take his corpse and just bring it up to the Oscars, you know,
the idea that a family can work together to produce a single piece of art and make something that is simultaneously about themselves and about everyone else, you know, it's a very meta picture. It references itself. It references its creators. It references its actors. And for that reason, I think it will have a very lasting, a very enduring presence in cinema. I just wish that it was more well known. I know you haven't. This is what's going to take it off. Just watch. You got Passion of Anna, The Leopard, and now you got The Dead. FYO is just going to raise them. It's going to be that.
Here's the thing.
It's going to be.
I want to mock like you, but I'm going to eat my words, you know? Because
you're gonna eat your words because this is gonna outperform your previous choice, Ghost.
Somehow it's going to, I'm sure.
And it's not like Yachty. It's not like Yachty has a bunch of different laptops up playing the episode simultaneously, so Yachty can get more views.
And here's the thing: I know it's not because I can see the cities everyone watches, and it's not Yachty.
And you know Yanni doesn't listen to it. Slice.
By the way, Yanni, have you paid attention to our most consistently performing episode?
No, I haven't. What is it? Is it Kabi Kushi?
It's Kabi Kushi. I'm telling you, sooner rather than later, it's going to be our number one. It's going to be. Every week we get one new one, at least.
Sean, if it will, I'm going to draw. I will personally buy a ticket, fly to Los Angeles, and strangle you in your sleep.
That's not how I thought that was going to end.
I will hold you. You can hold me to that, Sean. But if that happens, I will murder you.
And then you'll say, look at Sean. He's the dead. Hashtag the dead.
Well, it's about time we got to our dislike. Sean, what did you dislike?
Shit, there was something else I wanted to say. Oh, just real quick about John Huston. You still haven't seen Asphalt Jungle, right?
No, I haven't.
You gotta see Asphalt Jungle. It's great. It's great. It's another John Huston movie. That's why I bring it up.
I've seen the pornographic parody, Ass Hall Bunghole.
You have not. There's no such thing. You're just trying to be a wise guy.
I guarantee you, as soon
You're
as I mentioned
be a funny
it.
Funny guy.
As soon funny as I guy. Said it, I'm sure it exists. If it exists, there's a pornographic parody of it. Rule 42.
A pornographic movie from a 1950s black and white crime drama.
Yes. See, Casablanca?
I could imagine like a man who would be king. Porn parody. That makes sense.
A man
me.
Who,
the man
would,
who
bone
would be
kings.
King. I mean, it just writes itself. You know, yes. The men who are gods, they can have anything they want. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
It would probably be a gay thing, but yeah, you're right.
No, it doesn't have to be a gay thing.
There are a lot of dudes in that film.
There's plenty of women, too. You know what? The creator can do what they want. There's a lot of opportunity to, you know, go whatever way you want.
As probably long as an they orgy. Have a high production cost.
Probably an orgy. That's all that matters. Similar to whatever happened in that one racetrack in Lost Speedways.
But, Pennsboro, Sean. Get it right.
You know what I love about this podcast sometimes? Just making the references to episodes I know no one has ever listened to. And like, are they going to listen to it?
Hey, folks, go back so you can understand.
Sometimes I see you folks going back and I'm like, was it because we referenced it?
It's probably
because
we did.
But anyways, that was a fun episode. But anyways, our dislikes for this movie. So number one dislike, Colm Meaney is wasted. Now he...
This is one of his first roles.
I don't care.
One of his first bigger roles.
I don't care.
It was 1987.
If it's one of his first roles. He is a tremendous actor. He was great in so many movies. He's great in the TV show, Hell on Wheels. He's great in Con Air, which decides to actually use him. But in this movie, he's just relegated to the background and has like three lines. So that bothered me.
Look, I like Colm Meaney as much as the next guy, Sean. Everybody knows that Colm Meaney is an international treasure.
He is. He's right? Amazing.
But he couldn't have. It was a John Huston film, primarily casted through the avenues.
I'd swap
of nepotism.
Out the. I'd swap out the main guy, the guy that played Gabriel. With he did Colm a good Meaney. Job as. He did a good job as Gabriel, but like Colm Meaney would kill it.
I really like the decision to make it, to give him not a super Irish accent, but to give him like more of an English accent, as if he was like kind of caught in that space between Irish and English identity or British identity rather. Anyways, yes. Colm Meaney could have had a bigger part. Hypothetically, he also wasn't a big actor in 1987.
But you gotta see it.
He's not a big
it.
Actor
you
now.
You gotta see it. Who cares?
You got to see it. It's in the hair. You can tell. Look at that hair. It's so curly. It's in the name. That's not a name. Colm? How audacious. Give this man...
A comb.
A comb, I suppose.
C-O-M-B.
What?
Colm. Okay. His name is Colm, C-O-L-M. Give the man a comb, C-O-M-B. I think that's a funny play on words, but...
It's 4 out of 10.
Anyways, I'm picking Con Air next time, by the way, folks.
Please don't.
I'm not.
My one dislike, well, one of my first dislike, if you can really call it that, but it's more just something I acknowledge. It's an inherent weakness in the film. And it's that if you're not like a big cinema fan and you come into this thinking that, you know, it's come into it expecting some sort of traditional film going experience, you're going to be sorely mistaken. And a huge part of that has to do with the fact that it's a very accurate adaptation. It's a very good adaptation of this short story in which not a lot happens. And for that reason, I can see one of the shortcomings being that this is kind of this might honestly kind of just be for the Joyce fans in out there. You know, it didn't perform super well at the box office.
It was no Three Men and a Baby.
It didn't have a high production budget either, so it made its money back. But, well, I actually don't know if it made its money back. I don't remember if I checked the numbers.
Check it.
You check. I'm talking.
You're the one talking about it.
Okay, whatever. Anyways, because it is so similar to the James Joyce work, because it is slower and non-traditional in a narrative sense, I can see it not being as accessible for some viewers. It's not really a complaint. It was totally accessible for me, but I can see it as an objective sort of trammel, I guess, to enjoying the film.
Well, I'm not a James Joyce fan, and I like the movie, though.
That's okay.
And I'm not saying I hate James Joyce. I don't read, okay? I don't read, folks.
You should.
I was supposed to read Portrait of a Young Artist as a young man in high school.
Portrait of an Artist as a young man. I just sparks nest it. Well, Sean, you know what? A good place to start is Finnegan's Wake. You should start with Finnegan's Wake.
You want to know how joke. Much don't I don't start read with Finnegan's narratives. Wake.
You'll kill yourself.
What was the Pearl? Who's the author on that?
Steinbeck. Didn't read The Pearl?
I got
it's
a couple
like 90 pages.
It's pretty short. Yanni recommended I got the Steinbeck book, which is short stories. Which one should I read? He says, read The Pearl. I got
it's
a couple
such
of pages.
An easy
into
read.
It wasn't hard at all. It was fine. It's just,
how do you not finish?
I'm
don't
not a
understand.
Big reader. I'm not a
how
reader.
How you don't finish it?
I'm not a reader. Well, here, let me correct that. I'm not a fiction reader. I like nonfiction a lot, but I just...
Oh, I'm the exact opposite. I hate nonfiction.
I have a hard time with fiction.
Hate writing it.
I can acknowledge it's good. I just have a difficulty reading it. But anyways, other thing I wanted to say before I get to my next point. Isn't it just incredible how John Huston can do such a small, tight film like this versus such a huge and gigantic film like The Man Who Would Be King?
Yeah, no, he was a very versatile director. There's a reason he worked for what? He was working for like nearly 5 decades, wasn't he, as a director?
Something like that.
He was definitely, what is it? He did Sierra Madre, right?
Yes.
That was the 1950s.
You can
50s,
add that
60s,
to your
70s,
list.
80s. Yeah. What? You don't like it?
I didn't like it in high school, but for all I know, it might be another Once
no,
Upon a Time
I can't
in America.
Pick it then. It probably would be. Who doesn't like Treasure of the Sierra Madre? I haven't
like
met a single person.
I didn't like it.
You were also you in high school.
Damn. Ouch. Wow.
So what's your second dislike?
My second dislike, going off of what you're saying, I wrote, is this a movie or just a really long scene? Because it's barely a movie. It is it's well done for what it is, but we are in one space for the most part. And it's the smartness of its editing and its shot choice is very subtle and very small. And I don't feel like because of, I guess the narrative and the reflective nature and the, just not climactic at all. It just doesn't lend itself to cinema that well. I mean, that being said, I think it's done probably, this is going to contrast a little bit with my next point, but it's done pretty darn well considering. It's just, I haven't read the short story it's based off of, but I can only imagine it doesn't hold a candle to it as much as good as it is. And the thing is, it's not like I am out on small contained films. I mean, I absolutely love 12 Angry Men, but that's a narrative that still does well within the context of film, just based off of the nature of the story. And I think just with what this movie is doing, I just don't know if it needed to exist. I don't have a problem with it existing. I thought it was solid. It just,
I honestly think maybe a better medium might have been
podcast,
the stage, radio play, the stage,
yeah.
Drama.
Yeah. No,
like a stage adaptation. That probably wouldn't have been a better place.
I think it'd be a great stage adaptation. I think it'd be fantastic on the stage. Just with film, with a lot of stage adaptations where you just go like, this doesn't feel filmic. That's how I felt.
You know, I don't disagree. And that's part of my first point. My second point's not really a dislike so much as it is just a tiny thing. It's a tiny little pet peeve. I hate California and I hate Los Angeles. And to know that the very last shot of this film was of one of the rare times that it snowed in Joshua Tree, that they had to go up there and set up a camera and record it and then make it the very last shot of this film and pretend like it was Dublin, Ireland.
Joshua Tree's in California, by the way, not Dublin, Ireland.
Kind of felt like a shot to the crotch. That being said, the sort of tropical island vegetation that you see transplanted to California is actually native to Ireland. So the choice isn't that far-fetched. Not to say that Joshua trees are natural, but palm trees, all of that, you actually see things like that naturally there. But to know that this one last shot of a film that's supposed to take place in Ireland is California kind of kills me on the inside.
Good. Can you be the dead now?
It's that shot to the crotch, but it's actually a knife. And it plunges into my torso and it twists and it remains there. It's a part of my body. My flesh grows over it.
Let him bleed out.
And I just go on living with this knife sunken into my abdomen. Sean, what's your third dislike?
Well, my third dislike is that didn't kill you. I'm kidding.
You don't know that.
You're talking. You're still alive. What are you, Patrick Swayze ghost?
No, this could all be
you're
like
the ghost just to do this podcast.
This could be the fleeting fantasy of my last few seconds. I'm just going through it all in my mind.
Oh wait, no. If you're Patrick Swayze ghost, does that mean the microphone is Whoopi Goldberg?
No. My chair is Whoopi Goldberg. The microphone is Demi Moore.
But Demi Moore didn't understand the language and take it in. That metaphor makes no sense.
No, it's because I'm putting my lips real close to the microphone.
Oh my god! By the way,
because I wish it
he
was,
has a pop filter on. He's putting it close to the pop filter.
I wish it was Demi Moore with that short little haircut of hers.
I mean, don't we all? Don't we all? Anyways,
you don't.
Listen, like I said, just grow that hair and you're perfect. my last dislike. So I wrote a joke in. Because at one point, the characters are having, what was it? Was it ham or turkey?
Goose.
They are having goose. And I guess applesauce is something you have with goose. And everyone's like, why is there no applesauce? This is a travesty. And I wrote, where the fuck was the goddamn applesauce? Not that I thought applesauce ever went with goose. Not that I've ever had goose. Well, I might have had goose in Hong Kong. I can't remember. But I don't think I've had goose. So
you've had duck. We had duck that one time.
When did we have duck?
Remember the crepe, the duck l'orange crepe?
But I had a banana. We shared something.
Yeah, you had a bite. No, I had the roast beef and mushroom. You had the duck l'orange. You've had duck, and it was pretty good. So
I mean, I thought I had duck in Hong Kong. I had some weird animals in Hong Kong. I had some snake
soup.
Did
you have a monkey?
Great shit. And I didn't have a monkey. It was like, I think it was human. Like a goose. Or, this is a non sequitur. Who cares? Who cares what I ate? I'm not some food aficionado.
So what's your real third dislike?
I mostly eat hamburgers. My actual third dislike is that the end narration is so good that it kind of sullies the rest of the everything else that comes before it. Because let me finish. Everything else that comes before it is solid. It's solid. But when I just think to myself, and we were debating, is Gabriel really the protagonist of this movie? Where he's very clearly the protagonist at the end narration.
He's the conduit. He's the conduit for the film, more than anything. He's not really the protagonist.
Sure. But I just feel like that narration was so strong that I wish I had more of it, and that I wish it was Pepper throughout the whole movie. Now, maybe they did that, and then they realized it didn't work. I have no idea. But
I actually have insight for that.
It felt a little bit of a shame to not have it.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my third dislike.
So this ties into my third dislike, which I also wanted to have more VO because I love the voiceover at the very ending. It's one of the most beautifully written parts of the short story. It's probably the most beautiful part of the film, too, outside of the musical performances. However,
much of it was Joyce and how much of it was Frank Houston?
It was all Joyce. Here, the thing is, it was all Joyce. And the thing is, that's really the only part of the short story where the narration is like that. And I mean, it kind of dips into it a little bit earlier on in different parts, especially where concerns Greta and some of the other older women. But for the most part, it only really gets that sort of that philosophical, I would say, at the very end in the last couple of pages. And I wanted more of it, but I know I can't have it. And that's because production knew, John Huston knew, Tony Huston knew that James Joyce's writing was inimitable, and they respected the fact and realized they shouldn't even try to come up with something that parallels it, because they just couldn't have. No one's done it. No one had done it in 70 years. No one's done it yet. They just realize, okay, we're kind of, everything else is just this good. We can't go past it. Let's just try to, let's finish strong, not trip ourselves up. I don't know. Maybe they did write VO and they realized that it paled in comparison to what Joyce had actually written. And for the film, it probably would have satisfied those sort of, that desire for interiority that the audience wants from a protagonist throughout the film. So it would have made more sense. It just, you know, it wasn't something that was meant to be. End of the day, they were kind of backed into a corner, so they did the best they could with the brilliance of the source material.
Yeah, I'm actually reading right now that they did write some voiceover that they tested. It didn't work. So what, because keep in mind, Tony Huston's written other things. He actually took that voiceover and recycled it into another film. That film, if you what? Guys want to watch it, it's called Curse of the Swamp Creature.
You're joking.
What?
You're joking. That's not a thing.
Curse. No. Look it up. Tony Huston, Curse of the Swamp Creature. Look it up.
He reused voiceover from the dead. Curse of the Swamp
Creature. His attempt at James Joyce voiceover for Curse of the Swamp Creature, which he did, in fact, write.
Well, you know, it's hard living in your dad's shadow and your sister's shadow. It's hard. It's difficult. I get it. You know, that's a lot of very high expectations
to meet. I lied there. Tony Huston did. I can't believe Yanni went along with that. Yeah, Tony Huston did write a movie called Curse of the Swamp Creature that came out in 68. So it's not like he recycled anything. Oh. That bit was a joke, but...
No. He recycled what he wanted to use in The Dead from Curse of the Swamp Monster.
Yeah, he was writing Curse of the Swamp Creature and he went, wait a second, my dialogue that I'm writing for this B sci-fi horror movie... sounds like James Joyce.
It sounds like a period story written by James Joyce. Yes, exactly.
Maybe I should save this for later.
20 years later.
Oh my God. Anyways.
Sorry, Tony. It still doesn't work. I'm going to go ahead and die now, but I'm not letting this fly.
Tony, they're having a intimate dinner right now. There's no swamp creature. Why do you have a line about a swamp creature? Oh, sorry. I forgot to take that part out.
All right, Sean, final thoughts. What are your final thoughts on The Dead?
I guess you're really bad at reading me because, A, you keep picking movies that I like, or at least like to an extent. I'm not going to say like this is one of my favorites ever, but I thought it was pretty solid. And B, you keep picking these movies that have extended dinner scenes that go on for a long time and everyone's dressed up and just fucking, you know, chatting about nonsense. And when I say nonsense, I just mean it's not like narratively driven all that much. It's just how a dinner would normally be. Like, you keep doing this again and again and again. It's a weird niche to have. But I guess you're just that weird fuck. I don't know. So I like the movie 7.5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good.
If I can do decimals, are decimals allowed?
Sean, that's just, you know, imitation is just the worst form of flattery, as the saying goes.
Did you think that was flattery? I take that back.
No, 7.5. That was imitation. It was imitation is what it was. You try to imitate the great Sean. What happens is you get lost in their shadow. So don't try it. All right. Just don't.
Well, you can tell that to Tony Houston.
I think he's still alive.
Tony, you did a good job with this movie. We're just, you know, your knees.
It was his also his last credit to date.
It's an easy punching bag, you know? I'm sorry, bro.
I don't feel like he doesn't deserve this.
No, he doesn't.
Tony, you did a good job.
You did a good job.
And I don't say that in a patronizing way whatsoever. You did a good job with this, Tony.
He did a good job with the writing, yeah.
Tony, good job. Good job, Tony.
Tony, you're good, Tony. You're better than Tony Rigatoni, a person we will never talk about on this podcast.
No, Tony. Tony Rigatoni.
No.
He's a
No. Again, this is a character that when I visited Yanni, he made up this character named Tony Rigatoni, which we cannot tell you all the full details of Tony Rigatoni because as offensive as we got in this podcast about various topics,
it's worse.
It'll just
so much worse.
It'll get you canceled, is all. Because we didn't full on get into those jokes.
So, Sean, God,
Tony Rigatoni.
What are we watching next? Not this week, but in the next 2 weeks, because we're going to a 2 week schedule now.
Yeah. So, for folks, for next couple weeks, Yanni is dealing with a lot of school stuff, grading a lot of papers and whatnot. And I am doing other podcast ventures. I'm trying to do some other stuff. I won't get into it now, but exciting. I'm really looking forward to what I'm doing. But it's just going to take up a lot of my time. So we kind of decided to do every other week going forward. So that means we'll just be bi-weekly probably till the end of the year. So that's that. As far as the next episode is concerned, Yanni, like I had told you previously, the next couple picks I'm going to do all have to be the highest grossing movie of the year they released, because I want to make sure to get more listens than Yanni in this period. I want to be popular again. I want to be the talk of the town. I'm very petty. I'm very vain. So last week I picked Ghost. This week, just to clarify, it can be domestic or it can be worldwide. Either one, because sometimes they fluctuate, but one of those number ones. Anyways, so for our next episode, because Yanni, you picked a movie titled The Dead, I'm going to take Dead and just expand upon it. Add more to that title.
And?
Do you have any guesses as to what it is?
Bring Out the Dead.
You think Army Bring Out the Dead was the number one film of the year?
Dawn of the Dead.
Think Dawn of the Dead was the number one film of that year.
Bringing Up Baby.
All right.
Isn't there? There's some sort of...
All right.
No, Bring Out the Dead. That is the Nick Cage one.
All right. I'll just say it. It's going to be
Dead Man Walking.
This is going to be a movie I know I chastised Yanni for. I know he semi likes this movie, but we've also argued about it. And I know he has some reservations about it. I've been wanting to pick it for a while, and I think this is a good opportunity to do so. Next time, Yanni, we are watching Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest.
Dead Man's Chest. All right. You wanted to get into this. Sean, I don't know how I can't compare it to At World's End, but I'm going to.
Of course it's inevitable. You can compare it. I'm probably
going to. The whole argument hinges on me thinking At World's End is the finer flick of the two.
Okay. Here's what I'll say. Just we'll save it. We'll table it for the podcast, for the next podcast. I think At World's End is a fantastic film. I think they're all great. I just think that the second one is the best of the three. I know, controversial opinion. Most people go for number one. I think
it is.
The second one's
objectively
the best.
It just is.
I love them all. One of my favorite trilogies of all time. But I love the second
one. We don't all have an opium addiction that's slowly destroying our brains. So
what is that a reference to?
That's a reference to you being a drug addict. And that's why you like movies like Dead Man's Chest over Curse of the Black Pearl.
Is that why you pick Once Upon a Time in America, where Robert De Niro actually has an opium addiction?
Maybe. Wake up, Sean. Get help. Don't come to me for it, because I'm not going to give it to you, but go somewhere else. Get help.
I'm not getting any help. I'm tired.
I'm pathetic.
Of you. Okay. Well, co-worker who I will not name because I don't have permission, but as you can tell...
Berna? Was it Berna?
No, it wasn't Berna. As you can tell, we're clearly friends.
No,
we clearly
we're
respect
not.
Each other.
We are enemies who oh man, there's a great Tracy Jordan quote that I can't remember right now.
By the way, I'm pissed off at this.
The
All
IKEA
right, folks.
Episode
so here's what you gotta know before while you're thinking
six.
This quote. Do you have the code or do you want me to tell me say my story?
You keep saying your story. I'm going to look it up.
So, folks, I know Yanni loves 30 Rock. I know he loves Tracy Jordan Morgan.
Tracy Jordan played by Tracy Morgan.
I'm making a joke. But he also, I know, likes some Arnold Schwarzenegger comedies. So recently it was announced that Twins is getting a sequel called Triplets. And long rumored they wanted Eddie Murphy for the role. And now they're getting Tracy Morgan. I knew that would make Yanni quite happy. I sent him a link to the article. You want to know what he says to me? Nothing. He does not respond ever. I don't even know what you think about that.
I didn't get that.
I sent it to you.
I didn't get that.
Was it because you got a used refurbished phone that you get half the texts?
No. When did you send it?
I sent it like 2 weeks ago, man.
Sean Corbin.
It was a link.
This was before the Kodiak Bear. That doesn't mean anything yet, folks, but it will at some point.
You got me looking.
Jury finds Robert Durst guilty of first degree murder. Was that it?
No.
Because that's what I didn't respond to. Let's see.
It was September 14th.
Okay, hold on. I'm checking.
The last thing you called me was a Kurt.
Yeah, no, I didn't get it.
Oh my God. All right. Well, what do you think about that?
For whatever reason, I didn't get it.
What do you think about that?
I mean, I've known about the Eddie Murphy thing for years now.
Yeah, but I mean, how do you feel that now Tracy Morgan's in it?
I mean, I like Tracy Morgan. I've always liked Tracy
Morgan.
And you
like Danny DeVito.
Yeah, I like Danny DeVito. Is Arnie going to be in it? Or is he going to be replaced by Dolph Lundgren?
Oh my God. I don't think you can make the movie without Arnie.
I've never seen Twins.
You've never seen Twins?
No.
It's free on Peacock.
Trying to name drop Peacock here. Don't act.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Here's the quote. Here's the quote. I'm just going to drop this quote here. Okay. Friends, we are work acquaintances at best. At worst, we are rivals who inspire and try to make each other better. Now let's go get some tiny meatballs. Meatballs, here we come.
Does he say it's Jenna?
No. They're at IKEA, and it's Tracy Jordan. It's Tracy Jordan, Lutz, and Frank on Valentine's Day.
Oh my God, that was a good episode.
We're work acquaintances at best, Sean. Just remember that. We're not friends. Person who told Sean though? We're not
we
friends.
We don't get paid for this.
We are not friends. Well, it's hypothetical.
Yeah.
This is like YouTube in 2007, all right? This money is all hypothetical. It's coming at some point. It's just not here yet, but it will be.
Well, the difference is someday. In YouTube 2007, no one's making money. Where right now people are making money in podcasts, just not us.
Yet we
Joe
we
Rogan is making $100 million.
The isolated incidents of FYO with Yanni Pontescoto and Sean Corbin, that specifically is all of YouTube. In I just don't want to have to make you censor it. Is all of YouTube in 2007? Why are we still doing this? Go fuck yourself. This podcast needs to be over now. This episode is done. Bye.
Jeez. All right. Fuck you too, man.